Now we're getting to our Bible reading. So if you want to grab that sheet that was on your chair, right? I was going to say that you sit on. We're going to be reading the Bible now. And let me just remind you, there's a mobile number at the bottom. If you've got any questions throughout the sermon, please text it in. And Dwayne's going to see how many of them can answer at the end of the sermon. So we're looking at John chapter 8 from verse 34. John chapter 8. Verse 34. Jesus answered them, "Truly, truly, I say to you, everyone who practices sin is a slave to sin. The slave does not remain in the house forever. The son remains forever. So if the son sets you free, you will be free indeed. I know that you are offspring of Abraham, yet you seek to kill me because my word finds no place in you. I speak of what I have seen with my father, and you do what you have heard from your father." They answered him, "Abraham is our father." Jesus said to them, "If you were Abraham's children, you would be doing the works Abraham did. But now you seek to kill me, a man who has told you the truth that I heard from God. This is not what Abraham did. You are doing the works your father did." They said to him, "We were not born of sexual immorality. We have one Father, even God." Jesus said to them, "If God were your Father, you would love me, for I come from God, and I am here. I came not of my own accord, but he sent me. Why do you not understand what I say? It is because you cannot bear to hear my word. You are of your father, the devil, and your will is to do your father's desires. He was a murderer from the beginning and does not stand in the truth because there is no truth in him. When he lies, he speaks out of his own character, for he is a liar and the father of lies. But because I tell the truth, you do not believe me. Which one of you convicts me of sin? If I tell the truth, why do you not believe me? Whoever is of God hears the words of God. The reason why you do not hear them is that you are not of God."
Well, it is great to see. Oh, I can't see all of you. Well, I shall move over. Yeah, I can see you, Alex. Cool. It is great to see all of you and Alex, yeah, tonight. Listen, you're part of a conversation. There is a conversation happening in John 8, and we've been following this conversation. If you've been coming, you would know we've been following it in depth. And as I was working on this passage, it just struck me, you know, like all conversations, if you're not with the whole thing, you lose strains and traces. And tonight will be no different. So if you're a visitor, you're so welcome. But you've missed a bit of the conversation, and we're going to pick it up again from verse 34. And it weaves and weaves, and we just keep learning about how amazing Jesus is from his own words. So I'm going to pray, and I'm going to ask him to re-speak these words tonight to us and tell us more about him and the good news that he is. So let me pray. Lord Jesus, we're very privileged. We're sort of like eavesdropping. We're listening to you having an argument with religious leaders. And as you're having this argument, we're hearing the amazing truths about you, hard truths about us, but good truths because you can do incredible things for us. So help everyone here tonight to think and to listen, to ask questions, and to hear you speak. For we ask it in Jesus' name. Amen. Now, there's no question that love is in the air. You may not have, it's spring, but love is in the air. You're going to hear why. I'm not going to mention names yet, but there's love going on, and it's in the air. And so I wanted to ask you, what is the greatest love story you know? What's the greatest love story? You see, it depends how old you are. So I'm looking around. I don't think anyone here will remember the greatest love story was Casablanca. But you won't know that because that's like forever ago before they had color. So the next one, probably my age, is Sleepless in Seattle. That was huge. I know it's corny now, but it was huge. You know, in my day, if you're in your late 20s like me. If you're younger, then the greatest love story you're thinking of is Shrek. I mean, what's better than that? And if you're really cool, then you're thinking of Mike and Anna. You just got engaged. Yeah, how's that for a love story? Yeah, right there. Yeah, that's a huge love story. And here's the thing. All love stories have a similar idea about them. There's some barrier. There's some problem that the lovers have to overcome. Mike had to get through the whole Cowan family, you know. There's always some barrier. So I'm going to haul up something, and I'm going to show you. This, I think, is, in my view, this is the second greatest love story ever told. It's about two households. Let's play a game, because you're all educated. Let's see if you can guess. And Danny, you get to guess what language this is. Two households, both alike in dignity. From ancient grudge, break to new mutiny. From civil blood, make civil hands unclean. From forth the fatal loins of these two foes, a pair of star-crossed lovers take their life. But do with their death bury their parents' strife, the fearful passage of their death-marked love, and the continuance of their parents' rage, which but their children's end naught could remove. That's cool. It is English. It's English. Okay, so what is this? What is this? Yeah. Okay, so it's Romeo and Juliet. And it's an incredible love story. Because what you've got is you've got these two households, two houses, right? And they're at war with each other. Look, two households from ancient grudge. There is an ancient war going on between these two households. They're alike in dignity, so they're very powerful. The dignity in that language means very powerful, very established households. And it leads to bloodshed. Everyone gets civil, you know, it's kind of like civil blood makes civil hands unclean. These are otherwise dignified folk, but they descend into this mad bloodshed because of this thing. But out of them come children. And the amazing thing is that from these two foes come a pair of star-crossed lovers. Two people fall in love, Romeo and Juliet. From on the opposite sides. And the amazing thing is that through their death-marked love, they end the conflict. And that's what Romeo and Juliet's about. If you're writing exams on this soon, quickly take notes. But that's the point of Romeo and Juliet. What's Shakespeare trying to say? What he's saying is that love wins the day. What he's saying is that this ancient hostility could only come to an end through love. And so the ultimate aim of the book is that love is greater than death. Love triumphs over death. But there's a barrier. Who remembers the line? Romeo, Romeo, wherefore art thou Romeo? She's not saying, where are you, by the way, as I always thought. No. Wherefore art thou is, why are you Romeo? We're in the wrong house. Romeo loves Juliet, but there's a barrier. The barrier is you're in the wrong house. And I can't, let's just commit suicide. Because there's nothing I can do, okay? Well, yes, Now, here's what I want to say. This story is the second greatest love story because the greatest love story is the story of the Bible. God's story about his love for his people is the greatest love story. Here's why. For one thing, it's true. For one thing. And secondly, it ends better. And I'm going to show you that. In fact, let me take you through it because there's a lot of parallels. All love stories are somehow based on that great one story. Deep within the human consciousness is an awareness of the ultimate love story. And I want to show you that. I think all stories are based on it. So let's begin. Let me show you that there are two households, ancient households that are at war. In fact, last week we ended at verse 38. Look at verse 38. I speak of what I've seen with my father. You do what you've heard from your father. Ah, there's two households. There's two dads. There's two fathers. And they're at war. And this is an ancient war. So have a look at this passage in the Bible. This is way back in Genesis chapter 3. And what we learn is that there's two houses. God said, I will put war, enmity between you and the woman. Who's God talking to? He's talking to the serpent, the devil, Satan. And he says there's going to be a war on earth. And it's going to be a very long war. A war between you, devil, and the woman. Between your offspring, devil. So you're going to have children, devil. You're going to have children. And the woman's going to have children. But there's good news. Because in the end, the child born of the woman's offspring is going to smack your head. He's going to bruise your head. But it's going to hurt him. There's going to be blood because you're going to bruise his heel. And from that, we learn that there are these two houses, the house of the woman and the house of the devil. But as the Bible carries on, the house of the woman gets more narrowly defined. It gets more narrow, narrower and narrow. And so look, it comes to one man. Look at this passage. Now the Lord said to Abraham, there's a whole lot of people on the earth, but God comes to one man, Abraham. And he says, go from your country and your house, your kindred, and your father's house to the land I will show you. I will make you a great nation. I'll bless you. I'll make your name great, so you'll be a blessing. I'll bless those who bless you, and him who dishonors you, I will curse. I'm going to be on your side. And in you, all the families, all the houses, all the households of the earth will be blessed. So God says it's going to be the offspring of the woman. But what God does is he narrows it down. It's not all the offspring of the woman. It's now Abraham. It's narrowed down to Abraham. But then it gets narrowed down even more. Because what happens to Abraham? I nearly said Adrian. Sorry, mate. What happens to Abraham is that he has two sons. One's name is Ishmael. The other one's name's Isaac. They're both his kids. They're both born in the house. But God says, kick out Ishmael because he's a son of the slave. He's a slave. And keep Isaac. God narrows it down to Isaac. Look what Jesus says there. And that's the background what Jesus says in verse 34. Jesus said to them, truly, truly, I say to you, everyone who commits a sin is a slave to sin. The slave doesn't remain in the house forever, i.e., Ishmael. But the son remains forever, i.e. Isaac. Okay? So if the son sets you free, we'll come to that, you'll be free indeed. What's Jesus saying? He's looking at the Jews. Look what he says in verse 37. I know that you are offspring of Abraham. Dudes, I can see your DNA. I can see your genes. I'm the creator of the universe. I know who you are. But don't presume. Just because you're born of Abraham does not mean you're in Abraham's house. Think of Ishmael. He got kicked out. Jesus is giving the most strongest warning to the Jewish people. Don't presume. Don't presume. But it doesn't just get narrowed down to Isaac. It gets further narrowed because Isaac has two sons, Esau and Jacob. And God says, Jacob I love, but Esau I've hated. God chooses Jacob. It gets narrowed down to Jacob. Jacob has 12 sons, okay, 12, and they are renamed Israel. And God says, those 12 sons of Jacob, they are my son. Look what he says here. God says this, you shall say to Pharaoh, thus says the Lord, Israel is my firstborn son. And I say to you, let my son go that he may serve you. God's always wanted to free his son, his children. That's why Jesus said, if the son sets you free, you'll be free indeed. Let my son go, that is Israel, that he may serve me. If you refuse to let him go, I'll kill your firstborn. God's judgments are always fair. always fair. If you kill my son, I'll kill yours. Behold, I will kill your firstborn son. So it narrows down to Israel. Israel is God's son. It narrows down even more. And you're going to have to come back at Christmas to hear about that. Because it narrows down to David and David's son, Solomon. But I won't go there. But at the end of the day, it narrows down to one individual. One individual. And Jesus tells us who that is. Look in verse 34. Truly, truly, I say to you, everyone who commits a sin is a slave to sin. The slave does not remain in the house forever. The son remains forever. Now, look what he does. So if the son, see it's a capital if, because there's emphasis. If the son sets you free, you will be free indeed. I know you're offspring of Abraham, yet you seek to kill me because my word finds no place in you. I speak of what I've seen with my father. You do what you've heard from your father. What's Jesus saying? Jesus is saying is, I am the son. God is my father. I am the house of God. There is only one son of God, the ultimate son of God, and that is Jesus. Now, where's the love? Friends, here's what you're going to see tonight. The astonishing thing is, poor old Romeo, he just couldn't, you know, Juliet was born in Capulet. Romeo was born in Montague, and never the twain come together. That, you know, there's nothing he could do. Here's what Jesus does. The astonishing thing is, if the Son sets you free, you'll be free indeed. Jesus says he can take you out of the wrong house, and he can put you in the right house. Because the son is heir of the house, just like Romeo. Romeo's the heir of the house. He's the ruler. He's going to inherit everything from his dad. But he can't bring people into the house. So he commits suicide. The Bible doesn't end in suicide. Jesus dies in order to free people from the house. But the Bible ends in, how does the Bible end? In a wedding. They live happily ever after. Because it's the ultimate love story. The Bible ends in a wedding. So here's what we're going to see in our passage. We're going to see two warring houses. Look at verse 38. I speak of what I've seen with my father. You do what you've heard from your father. We're going to see in our passage, who are the dads? Who are the fathers? Then we're going to see, why are they fighting? Why are these two houses fighting? What you're going to see is the one house hates the other house. Not the other way around. The one house hates the other house. And then we're going to see, and here comes the crunch, and here's the challenge of the Bible, which house are you in? This can be a big challenge. Don't presume. No, I'm in that house. Whoa. Listen to Jesus. The Jews were absolutely persuaded they're in the right house. Jesus says, you're in the wrong house. Double check which house you're in. But ultimately, it is Jesus Christ who will set you free. So two things tonight, two houses, two things. Here we go. Number one, only those who love Jesus have God as their Father. Only those who love Jesus have God as their Father. Friends, how many houses are there? Two. There is offspring of the woman, narrowed down to Jesus. And there is offspring of the devil, which I don't read anywhere, gets narrowed down. There are only two houses. You're either in this house or you're in this house. You're not in your own house because you didn't make yourself. There are only two houses, only two tribes. Only two fathers. Either God is your father or the devil is your father. So who's your father? Well, look at it. Verse 39. So they answered him. Well, the Jews are confident. Abraham is our father. Oh, absolute confidence. And they, well, you know, we're Jewish. Hey, man, you come to my home, come to my lounge, look on my mantelpiece. I've got a family tree. I've even been to Channel 9 or whatever it is, and I've traced my dynasty, you know. Come to the showers, I'll show you. I'm circumcised. I am so Jewish. You know, Abraham is my father. We are children of Abraham. Look what Jesus says. Jesus said to them, no. If you were Abraham's children, you would be doing the works Abraham did. But now you seek to kill me, a man who told you the truth that I heard from God. This is not what Abraham did. You are doing the works your father did. Now, how jarring is that? Listen, let's talk about our culture. In our culture, if you self-identify, no one can touch you. Your self-identification is the highest thing in the world. If you self-identify as a boy, everyone must respect that. The end of the story. There's no discussion. If you self-identify as a girl, everyone must accept that. It's the end. If you self-identify as an Apache helicopter, that's who you are. No one can argue with you. And worse, they will have to build you a toilet that suits you. Because if you self-identify, that's the highest thing. The Jews self-identified as Abraham's children. The Jews self-identified as Jewish. And along comes Jesus and overrides them and says, no, you're not. Now, how jarring is that? It's just as jarring in our society, you know. But the Jews must have been so offended. Who do you think you are? Who are you to come along and tell me, no, you're not? What authority does Jesus have to override their self-identification? And I want to tell you, logically, only God can do that. The creator of something can say what it is. If there's no creator, then you are free to self-identify. You can, whatever you want to be, you're it. A Dalek or whatever. But if there is a creator, logically, only he can self-identify. He can identify who you are. So who does Jesus think he is? Well, the Bible actually does that. Have a look at this. No one is a Jew who is merely one outwardly, nor is circumcision outward and physical. A Jew is one inwardly. And circumcision is a matter of the heart, by the spirit, not by the letter. His praise, that's a pun, by the way, because the word Jew comes from the word Judah, which means praise. But anyway, his praise is not from man, but from God. Here's the thing. Man can't identify you. Only God can identify you. And Jesus says, you know how God identifies you? He doesn't take a blood sample. He doesn't look at your biology. He looks at your heart. It is your heart that identifies who you are. It's your heart attitude that identifies you, not your self-identification. And particularly, look again at this passage. Look closely. Verse 39, if you were Abraham's children, you'd be doing the works of Abraham, but now you seek to kill me, a man who's told you the truth that I heard from God. It's not what Abraham did. You are doing the works your father did. Now hear what Jesus says. Your heart's attitude to me identifies you. Did you hear that? What identifies you? Your identity is dependent on your heart's attitude to Jesus. I want to go further. When I've been there 10,000 years, bright shining as the sun, ain't no one going to come to me and say, I know you, you're an Olivier. My identity is not my surname. No one's going to come to me in 25,000 years in heaven and say, you're a South African. No one's going to do that, you know. What they're going to do is, my identity will have been shaped for eternity by my heart's attitude to Jesus. That's what Jesus is saying. Your heart's attitude to Jesus identifies who you are. So tonight, do not sit here and say, I am a Christian, and depend on your self-identity. If you self-identify as a Christian, that's less important than whether Jesus identifies you as a Christian or not. Religious people don't like what I just said at all. Because look at verse 41. Look what happens. You are doing the works your father did. We haven't got to who your father is. So they said to him, mate, we were not born of sexual immorality. We've got one father, even God. So now, when you can't argue with someone, what do? You just insult them. That everyone, it's called ad hominem. You know, it's the last resort. When you're fighting with someone, you don't have a good argument, just say something about their mom. It's a terrible thing to say. Well, they do that with Jesus. But they're not talking about his mom. They're talking about his mom and his dad. Look what they say. We're not born of sexual immorality. In other words, Jesus, bear with me here. Jesus, if there's a bastard in this room, it's you. That's what they're saying to Jesus. We're not born of sexual immorality. Wink, wink. Tell us again what happened to your mum. She got pregnant before she was married to Joseph. We're not the ones, buddy. You get it? They're saying, Jesus, you're illegitimate. Not us. But look what religious people do. We have one Father, even God. There's only one God. And he's the Father of us all. Do you like that? That's the way religious people think. In fact, one of the greatest religious leaders is this guy, Desmond Tutu. Archbishop Desmond Tutu. He wrote a book called God Has a Dream. And in his book, he says lots of things. But one of the things he says is this. God's dream is that you and I and all of us will realize that we are family. In God's family, there are no outsiders, no enemies, black, white, rich, poor, gay, straight, Jew, Arab, Muslim, Christianity, Hindu, Buddhist, Hutu, Tutsis, Pakistan, India, all belong. He says that because you're a human being, God is your father. End of story. We're all in God's house. How many houses are there according to him? Just one house. We're all in God's house automatically. Everyone's in God's family. So he goes on. God's not upset that Gandhi was not a Christian because God's not a Christian. All of God's children and their different faiths help us to realize the immensity of God. No faith contains the whole truth about God. And certainly Christianity does not have a corner of God. This is a Christian leader. Archbishop Desmond Tutu. Do you know what the world will do with someone who says that? They'll give him a Nobel Peace Prize. And that's what he got. Because we love that. That's so cool. So the world claps, gives him a Nobel Peace Prize. You're a great leader. What do you think of someone who says that's not true? What do you think the world will do to someone who says that's not true? I think they'll get crucified. That's exactly, Jesus says that's not true. Look at what Jesus says. They say, we have one Father, even God. Verse 42, Jesus said to them, if God were your Father, what? You would love me. Who's in God's house? What color is in God's house? What race is in God's house? What gender is in God's house? What denomination? Is it Presbyterians? Is it Baptists? Is it Chinese? Is it rich? Is it poor? Who's in God's house? Jesus tells us. Look what he says. Jesus said to them, if God were your Father, you would love me. Friends, there is only one characteristic of those in God's house. You love Jesus. The only way to have God as your Father is if you love Jesus. Can I say that again? The only way you can have God as your Father is if you believe in Jesus. Oh, I got it wrong. What is it? Oh, you love me. How many Christians are sitting in churches, self-identifying as Christians, going, I so believe in Jesus. And Jesus will say to them, you're not mine. It's only those who love me, not those who believe in me, because the devil believes in me. I'm going to surprise you all. Jesus is not Donald Trump. Do you know what Donald Trump wants from you? He wants your vote. In fact, Donald Trump doesn't want you. He just wants your support. He wants supporters. If you believe in Jesus, all you're doing is giving him your vote. You're a supporter. Jesus is not after supporters. Jesus is after lovers. It's a love story. He wants you to love him. And only those people are in his Father's house. And the logic is verse 42. Look what Jesus says. Jesus said to him, if God were your Father, you would love me. For I came from God and I'm here. I came not of my own accord. He sent me. Now here's the thing. You say you know God, right? Who you've never seen. God's invisible. Here I am, standing in front of you. I've been with God. I come from God. In fact, he sent me. This is Jesus. How can you say you know God if you don't like me? How can you say you love God if you reject me? How can you possibly say you're in God's family if you're not a Christian? You can't be, says Jesus. Because if you can't love me who you've seen, here I am standing in front of you, how can you ever love God who you've never seen? That's the logic that Jesus uses against them in verse 42. So what's the big question tonight? What's the big question? If you love me, God is your Father. So come on, what are you asking yourselves? Be honest. Well, maybe it's just me. Do I love Jesus? I mean, I go to church. It's not what we're talking about. Do you love Jesus? Well, Dwayne, how do I know that I love Jesus? And that's our second point and final point for tonight. Only those who love Jesus have God as their Father. And everyone who disobeys Jesus' word has the devil as their father. Look what Jesus does. He teaches us what it looks like to have the devil as your father. And then you'll know what to love him looks like. Notice how Jesus' words divides people. Look at verse 43. Why do you not understand what I say? It's because you cannot bear to hear my word. You are of your father, the devil. See how Jesus, it's so clear. Look at verse 47, the last verse. Whoever is of God hears the words of God. The reason why you do not hear them is you're not of God. Oh, Jesus is so clear. There are only two houses. Jesus' word divides people. Oh, that's why Tutu gets a Nobel Peace Prize. Because he just says, we're all in, people. Jesus comes along and says, we're not all in. He divides. Even as I'm preaching these words, as I'm teaching in the Bible, there's a division happening. Some of you are getting grumpy. And others are going, yes, sign me up, Jesus. That's what Jesus does. His word divides us into the house of God and the house of the devil. Look at verse 43. Why do you not understand what I say? It's because you cannot bear to hear my word. Look what Jesus is saying. Please hear this. Jesus is not saying that not Christians are stupid. If you've got friends and family who are not Christians, Jesus is not saying they're dumb because they're not. Jesus is not saying Christians are clever because I'm standing here looking at you. They're not. Jesus is saying this. The reason you don't understand what I say is because you don't like what I say. It's because you cannot bear to hear my words. You don't like what I say. You really don't like what I say. Why don't you like what I say? Because you're a slave. You've been captured. Look at what he says in verse 44. You are of your father, the devil. Now watch this. Your will is to do your father's desires. He was a murderer from the beginning. He has nothing to do with the truth. Why? Because there's no truth in him. When he lies, he speaks out of his own character. For he is a liar and the father of lies. What's Jesus saying? Now you need to think now. He's saying this. You are of your father the devil, and your will is to do your father's desires. Jesus is saying that your will is captive, that you're a slave, that the devil's got you where he wants you, and your desires are to do his desires. Your will is to do his will, the will of the devil. And you're all looking at me going, but whoa, 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 I don't even like Harry Potter. That's not the devil. The devil's will is this. Look what he says. He was a murderer from the beginning. He has nothing to do with the truth because there's no... Now, let's think. This is hard, but stay with me. What's Jesus saying? You're saying, Dwayne, I am not captive to the devil because I don't want to kill anybody. It crosses my mind in the traffic, but it doesn't go further than that. So how can you, the devil's a murderer. You're saying I'm following his desires, but I'm not a murderer. Explain. Well, I will. Because what Jesus is saying is, what is murder? Murder is to reject Jesus. He's talking to the Jews who are going to crucify him. And he's saying, you're just doing what your father wants to do. Kill me. You reject me. To reject me is to murder the truth. When your father speaks, he never tells the truth. He's a liar. And that's what murder is. Murder is to believe lies about Jesus. Let's put it in English. Jesus is talking about character assassination. Let me put it practically. Every time you sin, you are believing a lie about Jesus. Did you hear that? Every time you do the smallest little sin, you are killing Jesus. In a sense, not literally, because you're believing a lie about Jesus. Every thought you have of Jesus that is not worthy of him and that is less than him is following your father's desires. Can I give you some practical examples? Let's say you do porn. You look at porn. Say, how's that killing Jesus? I'll tell you. If you look at porn, what you're saying is that, Jesus, you can't satisfy me. You can't satisfy me. You're not enough for my heart. I need some stimulation. You've believed a lie about Jesus. You're doing your father's will, and he's a murderer. He has sold you a lie that Jesus is not satisfying. Or let's say you steal. If you steal something, what are you doing? Here's what you're doing to Jesus. You're saying, Jesus, you don't provide for me. You don't look after me. So I'll just have to do it for myself, thank you. And I'll have to take that pencil home because you don't give me any more pencils or you know, whatever. You're killing your character assassinated because that's your father's will. He sold you a lie about Jesus. If you're a married man, Mike, write this down. If you're a married man and you look at your wife and you go, oh, you know what, I'm getting a bit bored here. I'm sure there's some twinkie in the city or whatever. You're believing this lie about Jesus, that he hasn't given you the right person, that he shortchanged you. Every time you do your father's will, which is to sin, you are character assassinating Jesus. You are believing some lie about Jesus. And that shows who your real father is. Look at verse 44. You are of your father, the devil. In the Jews' case, it was to murder Jesus. In your case, it's to believe lies about Jesus. Because look what he says. Your will is to do your father. He was a murderer from the beginning. He's nothing to do with the truth because there is no truth in him. When he lies, he speaks out of his own character. He's a liar and the father of lies. I mean, if you didn't get any of that, I'm going to wrap it up. What is satanic? Is it black? We have no idea what color the devil likes. I don't know why people think black is satanic. Is it Metallica? We have no idea that the devil likes heavy metal. We don't know that. What is it Harry Potter? That's just bad. It's not the devil. This is what is satanic. Look at this. It's amazing. No, keep going. Yes. Look at this. He began to teach them that the Son of Man must suffer many things and be rejected by the elders, chief priests, scribes, be killed after 3 days, rise again. He said this plainly. Oh, those guys are so evil. They're so bad. But look what happens. Peter, oh, he's one of the apostles. He takes Jesus aside and begins to rebuke him. And turning and seeing his disciples, Jesus rebuked Peter and said, "Get behind me, Satan, for you are not setting your mind on the things of God, but on the things of men." Any rejection of Jesus, his death, his crucifixion, his resurrection, any rejection of the truth about Jesus is satanic according to Jesus. It's heavy. I know this is heavy. So let me go even heavier since no one likes me anymore. I might as well, you know, in for a penny, in for a pound. Look at verse 45. Why don't your friends believe Jesus? Why aren't your friends Christian? Look at verse 45. Why aren't your friends Christians? Because it's the truth. It's such a shock. Look what Jesus says. But because I tell you the truth, you don't believe me. Wow. You know why they don't believe Jesus? Because it's the truth. Can you see how captive? You think, no, people are neutral information gatherers like squirrels gathering nuts in the forest. They're just running around looking for the truth. They're not. They are captive to the devil. And therefore, they don't want the truth. They don't like the truth. They hate the truth. And because Jesus speaks the truth, they hate him. We are trapped. There's only two houses, verse 46 and 7. Which one of you convicts me of sin? If I tell the truth, why don't you believe me? Whoever is of God hears the words of God. So who does Jesus think he is? Obviously God, because he's talking about his own words, the words of God. The reason why you don't hear them is because you're not of God. Only two houses. Now, I don't know about you, but where's the hope? Dwayne, I'm missing the love part. Where's the love part? Let's go back to where this passage started. Look at verse 34. Jesus said to them, "Truly, truly, I say to you, everyone who commits sin is a slave to sin." You're trapped. Your friends can't become. My dad is not a Christian. My dad cannot become a Christian. So what hope is there? Look at verse 35. The slave doesn't remain in the house forever. The son remains forever. So, if the son sets you free, you will be free. Oh, here is the hope. The only hope is that Jesus Christ sets you free. That he picks you up by your pigtails, or in my case, by whatever else. And he puts you in his Father's house. Only Jesus can do that because he's the Son. He's the Romeo who can go fetch Juliet and change her surname and put her into his house, and then they don't have to commit suicide anymore. In fact, Jesus Christ is even better, because what he does is he comes to earth to fetch his bride who's in the wrong house, and he takes upon himself all the wrong things she's done. He pays her debts and he carries her at great cost himself, and plonks her in his Father's house and gives her a new surname. This is how the Bible describes it. Look at this. We give thanks to the Father who has qualified you, because he's changed your name. I'll show you what your name is now. To share in the inheritance of the saints in light. He, not you, he has delivered you from the domain of darkness and transferred us to the kingdom of his beloved Son, in whom we have redemption. He went to the cross. He bought us with his own blood, and we have the forgiveness of sins. Debts wiped clean. Jesus can put you in the right house. No one comes to the Father except by me. That's what Jesus says. I'm thinking about Donald Trump again. I don't know why. This guy has got into my head. America is at war at the moment. There are two houses in America. Two houses, ancient grudge. There's the House of the Republicans, and there's the House of Democrats. Okay. And so you've got to think, which house do you want to be in? Who do you want to rule over you? Crooked Hillary or wacky Donald? Which, you know, and I'm thinking 250 million people, is that the best two you can come up with? But hey, okay, so you've got a choice, Crooked Hillary or Wacky Donald. Now let's say for a minute you get tired of all the spin. You know, I wish I could just tell the truth, because when I watch Fox News, all I hear is that Donald Trump is amazing. And when I go to CNN, all I hear is Hillary's amazing. So I'm tired of spin. How am I ever going to know the truth? How am I ever going to know the truth? Well, imagine Donald Trump has a son, and his name, just for argument's sake, is Donald Trump Jr. Imagine if his son came to you. He came looking for you, came right to where you were, introduced himself, got to know you, made friends with you, and said to you, I come from Donald. I'm his son. What do you want to know about Don? I'll tell you. I know everything, and you, at last, you get to hear the truth, because he's come from Donald. But imagine if he even does one better. He says, no, I tell you what, I'll take you to him. If you know me, you can come right inside. I'll introduce you to him. I'll get to know him. No, wait, I've got a better plan. Imagine if he says to you, tell you what, I'll get my old man to adopt you. You can become his child. That means when he cocks it, you get $15 billion and a couple of golf courses. You know, you can be adopted by him. Is this, look, it's a bad illustration, but are you working with me here? No, better still, you know what I'll do? I'll give you a hotline. He has a mobile phone. You know, you're driving to uni one day and the car blows down. Just phone your dad, Donald. Hey, Donald, my car, you know. Can I get it? Yeah, sure. He has $100,000, you know, whatever, you know. Wouldn't that be cool? Or imagine this. You and your mates go stay in one of Donald's hotels, and you're in the rock band, trash the place, and he doesn't forget, eh? And he's old, and you're in big trouble. And Donald's son says, I'll pay all your debts. I'll pay them off. You can get it. I mean, how awesome would that be? Except that you don't want the surname Trump. There's a problem. You don't want to have the surname Trump. Here's the thing. Jesus is the son of God's house. He can get you in. He can tell you about the Father, because he comes from the Father. He can give you a hotline where you can talk to the Father about anything. He can get the Father to adopt you so that you don't inherit $15 billion and three golf courses. You inherit the earth. Everything becomes yours. And he pays your debt. He pays all your debts. Forgiveness of sins. And you don't get the surname Trump. You get the surname Christian. That's your surname. And God is your Father. The greatest privilege a Christian has is to look at God and say, Abba, Dad, Father. That's who your Father is. And I'm talking tonight to people, and some of you have got nightmares. When you hear the word Father, you just want to vomit, because you've had a bad experience. Some of you have, like me, have okay experience, not great. I want you to get rid of that. Think about this. Imagine if you had a perfect Father. Everything your dad wasn't a perfect father. You might be following the society, because this society thinks you don't need a father. It's interchangeable. But I'm telling you, you need a father. And don't get upset because you don't have one. Jesus is offering you one. He can give you the father you long for. Three things why you need a father. It is your father who shapes you, either for good or for bad. If the devil is your father, you're going to get ears like him. Oh, you know. My point is, you're going to be like him. But if God is your father, he's going to work on your character. He's going to make something of you. Number two, if God is your father, he's going to provide for you, care for you, sustain you, protect you, look after you. And thirdly, if God is your father, oh my goodness, are you rich. You can inherit whatever he leaves you, which according to the Bible is everything. Friends, make sure you're in the right house. Ask Jesus to make God your father. No one comes to the Father, says Jesus, except through me. I'm going to let you stew on those things, chew over them, and if there's any questions, I'll take them after I've prayed. So why don't you do business? Why don't you ask Jesus? Knock, knock. Please let me into God's house. Make God my Father. Why don't you do that? And once we've prayed, I'll take some questions.